On this week's Big Tech Show, when will cars safely drive themselves on our streets? And who in Ireland is providing the technology to help them do that? We talk to one of the country's biggest automotive autonomy entrepreneurs.
I have BMW Drive Assist in my own vehicle, and it is much, much safer because we are all prone to distraction, especially when we're on the motorway from Limerick to Dublin, for example. We've all been there where you actually forgot a whole section of the road. So I would say if you take it from a safety perspective, and it does allow you to kind of relax.
The Big Tech Show, available on all podcast platforms.
This week on Crime World.
There was a Republican police from 1920. I mean, the IRA was effectively trying to run an underground government. And actually, there was a crime wave, 1919, 1920. There's a wave of bank robberies, post office robberies, robberies of individuals, robberies of pubs in Dublin and in rural areas as well. So the IRA tried to actually clamp down on that. They, on occasion, solving bank robberies and giving the money back to the banks. Now,
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you can listen to my podcast, Crime World, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
The second round of National Football League action produced plenty of drama and excitement over the weekend, headlined by Mickey Hart going up against his native county as a manager for the first time yesterday. The Oakleaf County ran out comprehensive winners in the end over Tyrone and Celtic Park. And on Saturday night, we had more drama, with Dublin once again being pipped by 1 point, this time by Mayo, as they kick a late point to grab a valuable victory. Welcome to the latest episode of the Throw-In Football Show. Will Slattery here with you, and I'm delighted to be joined by Dick Clerken and Conor McKeown. And Dick, we might start with that game in Derry yesterday. Obviously, plenty of early season intrigue about Mickey Hart going up against Tyrone for the first time as a manager, and kind of Derry continuing their very strong start to the season, obviously beating Kerry last weekend, and now comprehensive winners over Tyrone. How impressed have you been, like, taking into the account that they're probably maybe pushing a little harder early season than some other teams, still two very impressive victories?
Yeah, and good morning, lads. Yeah, listen, Mickey Hart, his lifetime, I think he said it post-match interview, like, it doesn't matter what time of the year it is, what competition, what game it is, he plays to win, you know, whether it's McKenna Cup, National League, and that's always been his approach. It was always his approach with Tyrone, and he's taken the same approach now with Kerry. Like, he believes in momentum, he believes in the positivity and the benefits of winning games and getting that sort of mentality in this team. And that's what he's doing with these guys. Like, they're showing no sign of stepping back or and they're really just pushing on. You just get the sense that there's just a bit of a complete push and focus to go the full way. And every game is sort of a stepping stone in that. Like, he's just got his sights firmly set on an All-Ireland at the end of July. And everything is a stepping stone towards that. And listen to the form team. I know a lot of other teams will talk about them later. The Kerrys, the Dublins, they're showing, you know, signs that they're moving towards. But if you were to sort of pick a form team and put good money on them at the minute, you know, Derry's looking a very good bet. And just very, very structured. They haven't lost any of that organisation and fluency that they had with Rory Gallagher. Like, they've just sort of seamlessly transitioned between two, three managers, which shows the quality of the players, that they're not dependent on a manager as such to drive and coordinate them. They've just got, like, the likes of Conor Glass, Chrissy McKay. They've got such strong leaders right through the spine of the team. And that ultimately is going to be the biggest thing, keeping all those guys fit and fresh and at the level of performance. But based on what we've seen on yesterday, it's going to be hard to beat.
Yeah, Conor, like, when Mickey Hart left Tyrone, like, there was a view, I think, in Tyrone that, I suppose, he wasn't the man that could anymore win in All-Ireland. That at the time had maybe passed him by. And then when he was announced as Derry manager, it was a bit of a surprise. No one had flagged it. Like, do you think Derry are closer to winning an All-Ireland now with Mickey Hart at the helm than they would have been, say, at the end of last season, you know, running Kerry very close, or if another manager had come in? Like, do you think Mickey Hart can win an All-Ireland still in his managerial career?
Well, he can, because he has the right materials. He's in the right county, you know. Like, when you say, are they any closer to winning All-Ireland? Well, they've won back-to-back Ulster titles, and they were within a whisker of Kerry in an All-Ireland semi-final last year. So you can't go much closer without winning it, you know. I mean, the only thing left to do is get to a final and then go and win it. And I only saw the clips of the match yesterday, but I was in Tralee last week, and I suppose what struck me is that, like, a lot of us were trying to figure out, what does a Mickey Hart Derry team look like? And the answer to the question is that it looks exactly like the Kilmina Derry team, which was exactly like the Rory Gallagher Derry team. All the same players were playing. They all played in the same positions. It was the same kind of squad composition. They ran the ball in the same way. They used their pace in the same way. When it suited them, they went long off kickouts to Rodgers and Conor Glass. Aaron Lynch sort of plays as an out ball. Like sometimes he was playing ahead of the two furthest Derry defenders back. So he was playing as the spare man because he wasn't being marked. And I think they're vulnerable in the same way. We don't talk much about Derry's vulnerabilities, but I think the way they play, they get so many bodies forward and Lynch leaves his goal so much that when they do turn over the ball, which is very rarely because they've got great ball handlers and pace, but when they do turn it over, they're vulnerable. And we saw that in the goal that Kerry scored last week when Gainey just basically tapped the ball into an empty net after Rodgers had been turned over. So, I mean, they're identical to what they were last year. Mickey wisely hasn't tampered with too much of what has made them good. And I think Mickey's philosophy that Dick outlined about winning every game, like I think Mickey's record in the McKenna Cup is 13 wins out of 22 appearances, which is, so, I mean, you don't do that by accident. I mean, that's a pointed, you know, that shows an attitude that he has towards that competition. But I think that philosophy, you know, if Mickey, you know, took over Dublin this year, I'm not sure he could necessarily go that route because of the age profile and everything else with the squad. But Derry's age profile is such, and there's so much pace in the squad and everything else, I think it kind of suits them to go that way as well. And up in Division 1, they're off to an absolute flyer. And I think by the time it comes back to that time of year when they have to take the next step, the one that they haven't taken yet, to be the Dublin or a Kerry in Croke Park or to win in All-Ireland, I think they'll be far better for having, you know, built that momentum and, you know, figured out those kind of game situations, the game management, everything else that goes into it. So, you know, it's only been positive so far. And, you know, I think maybe, you know, it could be that in 2024, Derry are actually a better fit to Mickey Hart's management style than Tyrone would have been.
Yeah. The only caveat, and we'll talk about Kerry in a minute, and maybe an over-reliance on a single player. Like, I think, you know, even watching him again, and I know there's much talk about Conor Glass, you know, coming back into the panel. Like, he is such a dominant presence around the midfield for them. Like, he just seems to be popping up everywhere you think he should be. There he is, whether it's on the end of a play, but end of the kickouts, or even the last man back tackling. Like, how many turnovers have we seen now in that sort of critical score in D area? Like, you should just run the stats on them alone. Like, he is such an influence on that whole team knitting together. If something was to happen him in a big game, be it an injury or a black card or something, that to me is a single big risk factor, because he's, and we've seen that. I think it was in the league final last year against Dublin, probably one game over the last two or three years they really looked a sort of an average team is when he was off the pitch. And, you know, keeping him right and fresh, but he's a consummate professional himself, and you hear him talk and how he prepares, so he know where he needs to be. He look after his body as much as expecting anybody else, but like, he is to me probably the in-form best footballer in Ireland the minute, you know, David Clifford's coming, and we've seen a glimpse of what he's going to bring to 2024. But in terms of the body of work behind him already, Conor Glass is out on his own at the minute.
Yeah, I'd be interested as well, maybe Dick as a midfielder. Just like, I've interviewed Conor Glass a couple of times after games, and what strikes you is that he's not, in terms of muscle mass, he's not the biggest guy around at all. You know, if you walk past him on the street, you wouldn't go, "Jesus, there's a big inter-county footballer." And another guy who's a bit like that as well is Brian Fenton. You know, there's not any extra fat or any sort of bulky muscle on Brian Fenton. And the two of them are extraordinarily durable. They just don't get injured. I think Fenton, somebody was telling me yesterday, Fenton has played all but 20 minutes of Desi Farrell's entire reign. So those guys are so key to their teams. But I think what works for them is, I'm sure some of it is, you know, physiology, but I think a lot of it has to do with the way they're conditioned. They don't get injured, you know, whatever about impact or anything else, they don't seem to pick up muscle injuries, soft tissue injuries, or any of those sort of things. And part of, I think, what makes them so influential is that they're always on the pitch.
It is. And even you're right. I look at those boys now, and the shape and physique of Gaelic footballers is changing like that. Whereas when I played, you know, weights and S&C was coming in, and a lot of boys were just pumping iron and getting big, and you would have found, and I probably looking back was maybe too top heavy. You look at these boys, big strong legs, big strong, you know, they're strong, they've got power. And even the way you look at Brian Fenton and Conor, the way they just sort of glide across the pitch, like they can cover box to box almost with no effort. You know, their weight and their physique is in the right places. Do you know what I mean? They're not carrying, and you actually don't need it now. If you think now, like, that there's so few big hits in Gaelic football, you don't need to be carrying big
body weight. You just need to have power in the legs and the hips, and that's where these guys have it, and they can just sort of glide around the pitch and be so effective. And sometimes it looks like it's a sort of minimal energy for them, you know. But Alisson, great to watch, because a bit of a throwback. We thought the midfielder in his old school ways was sort of gone, and Conor Glass and Fenton and these boys are sort of bringing it back in terms of how they play the game. So it is, I love watching them, to be honest with you.
Yeah, Conor Glass's partnership with Brendan Rodgers as well has been extremely effective for Derry. But from a Tyrone perspective, Conor, you know, watching the game yesterday, you wouldn't have picked Tyrone as the team that had won in Ireland in the last couple of years. Obviously, between form, panel absentees, and just guys kind of working their way back into a new season, it wasn't the same team but that won the All-Ireland a few years ago. But besides maybe the emergence of Darragh Canavan, there's not a whole pile of positives for them, you know, going into 2024. Or do you see anything that I haven't, or I've missed maybe?
No, I haven't seen anything at all. It's been a remarkable disintegration from an All-Ireland winning team. It's hard to, maybe Cork in 2010 or another team that sort of, you know, quickly went downhill afterwards. But I think the difference with Cork in 2010 was, you know, a lot of their panel were coming towards their peak by the time they'd won it. You know, they'd gotten closer and closer. Whereas I think Tyrone's All-Ireland, it looks more and more like the smash and grab that a lot of people thought it was at the time. Now, they deserve credit for doing that year. And I remember being at the All-Ireland Under-20 final the following year when they beat Kerry, and Darragh Canavan ran amok, and Big Micheál McGleenan was unstoppable under the high ball. And here were a couple of ready-made players, forwards, that were going up into senior, that were going to give you even more variety, you know. But it hasn't happened at all, and it's hard to sort of identify it, because for a team that plays with so much energy, that, you know, that like vim, you know, vigor, it's kind of their defining characteristic as a team, almost like Derry are now. They don't seem to possess a huge amount of it, and they don't send chills into many other teams. Like, I remember being on this podcast last year after round six of the league, and both myself and Dick had been in Clonus, and Tyrone had come and ransacked the place. And if you were to say that one of those teams that they were going to be All-Ireland semi-finalists, well, anybody who identified Monaghan would have been sort of quietly shepherded into a padded cell, you know. I mean, it didn't look like it was going to be that case at all. But no, since the championship last year, something has gone badly amiss with Tyrone. And, you know, I know the talk this time of year is about caveats and time in your run and everything else, and you know that's something that will shroud all our analysis of particularly Dublin and Kerry. But for a team like Tyrone, they need the good vibes, you know. They need to start well, they need to gather a bit of momentum, you know, a bit like a couple of the counties in Division 2 who have started poorly. You know, they are of the profile where winning at this time of year and putting in good performances is not only beneficial but it's crucial, and they're not doing it, and it doesn't bode well.
Yeah, especially after, you know, it was close at halftime yesterday as well, and it looked like they were, you know, I think they were 6 points to one down. They got it back to 2 points at halftime, and maybe kicking on in the second half. I think they had the win in the second half, but Derry just completely bossed the game from then on. We might move on to the Monaghan-Kerry game. Dick, I know you were there in Clonus yesterday. We're talking off air. You got to see kind of David Clifford mania firsthand.
It's a very entertaining afternoon in terms of, and I think there's a, the GAA are they're not missing a trick, but the potential for the league and what it is for families and kids, they can bring kids for free. There's something more can be done for the match day experience because of what they're coming into. Like, there was, I think it was close to 10,000 people in Clonus yesterday. I'd say when it was announced during the week that the Cliffords were on the team sheet, I'd say there was an extra 2,000 or 3,000, because it was that you could even sense that coming in. There was a sort of a buzz, and to be fair, I don't think that the amount of stewards that they needed for the crowd that was there on the day, you know, there's just people pouring into different parts of the ground that weren't open. So, you know, the game itself, very enjoyable first half. You know, it started, Kerry had the breeze. Sean O'Shea was, you know, whatever, David Clifford, he was imperious from start to finish in the terms of kicking. I don't think he hit a wide, and they hit the breeze. And Monaghan, like they did against Dublin, started very slowly, but next thing Monaghan started to build into it, started opening up Kerry, few goal chances, the crowd got behind them, then they got in behind, and it just made for really, really great stuff. And next thing, here Jack O'Connor gives the nod to the boy Clifford to come on just before half time. So there was a whole leading into the game, and then as the game progressed, this intrigue around, you know, when Clifford's going to play. So he had to roll the bench a wee bit quicker than he probably had expected, but he came in, and really it was the subs that made the difference in the second half between David and Paddy came in, Tadhg Morley. Kerry sort of controlled that second half. There's no point in saying otherwise. Monaghan you know, fought hard, fought well. But Clifford's goal, just a bit of magic in terms of setting up and finish, it just put too much between the sides of Monaghan, just couldn't claw back. But listen, it was a lot of positives from Monaghan still. They competed really well. The young lads especially put their heads up with good hours work. So Vinny will be sort of pragmatic as well in many ways. I met Jack O'Connor on the pitch after, it was a very brief chat, and I said to him, listen, we'll take it as a compliment that it took your best to beat us, and it did. Like Kerry, and he said, we wanted the 2 points. He said that to me, oh, we wanted the 2 points, Dick. And I said, well, you just got them and you deserve them. But he wasn't going to make the same mistake that Dublin did and think that they were going to beat Monaghan in third gear. He knew he had to bring his best to beat them. They did. It was good enough. And he'd be very happy heading down the road last night.
Yeah, Conor, on that point about, you know, Kerry needing their best, like it was surprising to me, you know, I think before the league I saw some Jack O'Connor quotes where he intimated that the Cliffords wouldn't be, you know, involved in the first two rounds, give them a little bit of a break. Obviously the Derry defeat, Kerry butchered a couple of goal chances ordinarily they take, maybe if the two lads had been playing, and then they call on David Clifford not only off the bench and put him on the bench but in the first half as well. Like, it doesn't do much for the narrative that they're over reliant on David Clifford, that they needed to spring him in the first half of a second round league game to get things going. Maybe
I've no idea. Like, I'm as surprised as you are. I was in Tralee when Derry played, and Jack was very coy on the prospect of the two lads coming into the squad, and he said it in such a way that, you know, we're sticking to our plan, whatever our plan is, and we sort of all assumed that, you know, the league being scheduled the way it is with two games and then a break, that the natural time for the lads to come back into the squad was, you know, in 2 weeks' time. But I mean, I don't know. Maybe he was looking for 2 league points. Maybe he was looking for a reaction from the first game. Maybe he wanted to see how certain players would perform with David Clifford in the team. Maybe he just wanted to get games into David Clifford. You know, he hasn't played a match since the intermediate Kerry final, which was at the end of November. So we must have thought that it was beneficial. I don't think they would have brought him up just for the sake of it. I don't think, you know, Jack was pressing any crisis buttons or anything else. But, you know, maybe just change the kind of vibe around the team or whatever it is. But, you know, they still have 3 or 4 forwards that they're going to be trialing over the course of the league. So I'm surprised they didn't just let them at it, you know, because when Sean O'Shea's in the team, you've got a guy who's going to get 90% of his frees. You know, it's not as if you're going to be losing anything from there. A lot of pace and energy in the half forward line. So, yeah, like playing David was hugely surprising as far as I'm concerned, but I'm sure there was reason behind it. I'm sure it was just the case of the 2 points. Like, I was just listening to Davey Bourke yesterday, the Roscommon manager in the Hyde. He made the point that this year's Division 1 is very much the 8 best teams in the country. Like, last year we had, you could make a case for Donegal, but other than that, you know, like last year we had Dublin and Derry in Division 2, and that probably meant that there were 1 or 2 weekends when, you know, the best teams could maybe rely on the 2 points. But, you know, if you lose your first game here, it's very hard to look at the next 6 games and see where you pick up a couple of handy points. And, you know, more than any county, I'm not sure Kerry necessarily want to be in Division 2. And I don't think that they want to spend the second half of the league, you know, everything they do, coloured by all the talk of a potential relegation battle. So maybe it was as simple as 3 league points.
Yeah, and I'd say there was a couple of things. I'd say the when he sat and looked at the fixtures, it was never the intention, but the fact that they lost against Derry, so they hadn't 2 points in the can, and then Monaghan done what they did against Dublin, he was like, oh, hold on a minute here, we can't lose 2 games against 2 Ulster teams and have a 2 week break with no points on the board. That's no dressing room wants that. No manager wants that sitting early doors. It doesn't, even though, yeah, you're always talking about the long game, you don't want that sort of niggling away. And then all the talk then is for 2 weeks void. It's, oh, well, you can't win a game without Davy Clifford and all this. So he probably just sort of said, listen, it wasn't the intention, but I think he made reference in his post-match interview that the boys have been training, they've been flying, they were mad to play. You know, why not bring them up the road? And job done. Like, he came in, they put in a good shift, no injuries, points in the bag, everything's positive heading down the road. Do you know what I mean? And I'd say he just didn't want to run the risk of joining Dublin or at the bottom of the table after the first 2 weeks.
Well, yeah, I mentioned his coach before the league. He also said that he couldn't live with himself if Kerry got relegated from Division 1, so he definitely selected his team, I think, accordingly to that. You know, speaking of Dublin then, Conor, you know, they're at the foot of the table, no points from 2 matches. Now, 2 narrow 1-point defeats, but 2 defeats nonetheless. And again, it's only like, you know, the hallmark of I know they're all Ireland champions now, but maybe some of the prior Dublin teams, was their game management at the end and managing leads or kind of eking out a late score? They couldn't do that against Mayo and then got caught napping for Fergal Boland's winner. Like, what have you made of them over the course of the first 2 weeks and I suppose how they managed the end game in Mayo on Saturday night?
Well, I thought it was a massive improvement on Castlebar than there was against Monaghan and Croke Park. You know, the first half in particular, they looked really sharp. You know, Jack McCaffrey looked like he was going to sort of blaze a trail over the whole season. But I do think Mayo were probably a bit better conditioned. And I think Dublin faded out of the game a fair bit in the second half. Like, McCaffrey at one stage was dominating the game, and so it was about 20 minutes in the second half where you just didn't see him. He wasn't on the ball, you know. He didn't come into the screen. So I would imagine Dublin are at a slightly different point in their season. I know Desi Farrell said afterwards that Division 2 wasn't a big deal last year, but I think he might be being a small bit facetious, because, you know, I was at a few of the Division 2 games last year and I could see lots of glum faces at some of the outposts that they were being sent to play their games while the real stuff was happening in Division 1. So I do think they'll try and avoid that at all costs. And I think it makes the league more interesting, you know, the fact that Dublin are now scrambling. I think if Dublin had won their first two games or got 3 points or even just won one of the two games, you know, the idea that they could run in a few more players and maybe take their foot off the gas before the start of the championship, you know, that would detract from the league as a spectacle. You know, we want a bit of jeopardy, and now there's huge jeopardy on all of Dublin's games from here on in. They have to beat Roscommon at home. That's the easiest on paper of their remaining five fixtures. So, yeah, they'll have to change it. But like, there are positives from Dublin. Like, I thought Theo Clancy was very good in Ed O'Shea the last day. I'm not sure O'Shea won a clean ball. I thought Greg McEnany had a fine game as well. And that's like, you know, what are Dublin looking for, really? They're looking for two or three players. And the big revelation is, like, Jack McCaffrey, okay, didn't have a good game against Monaghan, but he got through the period of time he was on the pitch. That's the longest Jack McCaffrey has played for Dublin in 4 years, you know, 5 years nearly, and the same at the weekend. So, you know, if you look at the Dublin team, it's great to have one or two players coming through, but if you look at the players who came back last year, Jack was never fit. Conor Callan had a poor season by his standards. Kieran Kenny was dropped. Paul Mannion only got fit by the All-Ireland series. So, you know, even from those really kind of frontline players, I think there's a lot more to come from them this year. And I think, you know, of all the teams in the league, for me, Dublin are the one that are playing the long game, because they probably have to.
Yeah, there's. You'd be worried though. Like, they should have beat Monaghan and they should have beat Mayo. Like, they were in control of both games, really. Like, and that would be a worrying thing. That, you know, the Dublin at their pomp, they didn't lose those games. They just had enough nous and savvy to get the job done, and whatever came off the bench would close games out. And that was, you just sort of got used to that. They didn't lose games that you thought that they might. And there's two games that you know it was very hard to see Monaghan beating them, you know, and even the way sure that first 20 minutes, like, Mayo looked leagues apart from them on Saturday night. So that'll be a bit concerning, that not the players that they have out on the pitch at the minute, regardless of who might come back or fitness, they should be able to get the job done. And it's just, is there a hunger or a sharpness or something missing there that they're not closing those games out? You know, that ruthlessness that we were so, you know, customary with Dublin, haven't seen that, you know, and even their lack of sort of goal chances, you know, that, you know, Conor Callaghan, you know, they're sort of all playing around the edge and it's all very structured, but, you know, like, they should be, you know, they used to be tearing two or three goal chances in a game, and that's where they really put teams away, and they're just not doing that. So you'd be a concern from that point of view, that they're just not showing that level of ruthlessness. I know it's early in the season, but at the same time now, you know, not going to be much crack in the Dublin training camp, 2 weeks, two defeats behind them. You know, the same as we were talking with Kerry, winning is a habit, as they say. You know, even though they were in Division 2 last year, they were winning games. That's a positive thing, no matter what level that you're at. Losing games is not a positive thing, and it doesn't bode well for any team trying to build for bigger things in the year. So they'll want to get back on the winning track very quickly, and God help Roscommon in 2 weeks' time, because I do fear that they're going to get the brunt of that, because you're going to see it soon at some stage.
Yeah, I don't think, I just don't think the Dublin are built like that anymore. They're not the team that Jim Gavin was over. You know? Their age profile, like when Jim Gavin came in there, they still had, you know, the guts of that team were in their peak. Paul Flynn, Bernard Brogan, Michael Darren McCauley, Darren McConnelly. And then you had this new wave of Fenton, Kilkenny, John Smolcombe. So it was the perfect mix. And it meant that everybody is rabid and everybody is fighting for the place and you have to perform every day. And you have the best squad. That's the other thing, that had the best squad in the country, probably by some distance. But whereas now, I think the profile of the team and the squad is such that... And look, you know, we have nothing else to go on at this time of year, so we have to take what we see with our eyes as being valid. But the fact of the matter is, no more than that day in Clonus when Tyrone destroyed Monaghan last year, you know, when Dublin drew with Roscommon last year in the round robin series, you know, they looked woeful. When Kerry were obliterated by Mayo in Killarney in the round robin series, in the All Ireland Championship, we were all saying that Kerry aren't there. They were the two All Ireland finalists. So sooner or later, we're going to learn our lessons. But until then,
we'll be back there again in July.
We'll be back there in July again.
All those pundits know.
Yeah, ringing the bomber.
Where are we making it up as we go along? Anyway?
Dick, what will Mayo be thinking after the first two rounds? You know, they were much more comprehensive victors over Galway than they were over Dublin, and you know, they didn't hit their straps for long periods. The goal probably came at a great time for them, just when they needed that little bit of oxygen. But you know, Kevin McStay said he would have taken a point. He ended up with two. Like, they must be delighted how they've started the season.
Oh, absolutely. I'd say he's probably scratching his head wondering how they got the 2 points the other night, because they looked anything but it for large periods. Yeah, the goal just was a nice bit of luck, but he's sitting pretty. It'll be interesting to see what approach he takes. You know, he'll pick up enough points over the next couple of games to leave them safe. You know, 6-7 points will do the job. Does he want to be in the same situation as he was in last year, you know, league final and the run into the Connacht? It'd be interesting to see what their strategy is, you know, post-league. You know, will he start resting players or sort of, like, I'm looking at, for instance, from a Monaghan point of view, we've got them in the last game of the league in Clonus. I'd love if he was sort of thinking, right, I think he sort of put out a second team last year, was it 2 years ago, that Monaghan went to Castlebar and won, that they've sort of, right, we've enough done for the league, let's start prepping for the Connacht Championship. And, you know, so I'd say he could be delighted that we've got that body work. You're not having to go down to the last two runs of the league and two games of the league to get enough points on the board. So I'd say he's absolutely delighted just to have the points. A lot to improve on, let's be honest as well. Like, there was very poor in the first half for large parts. You know, they need to get Tommy Conroy back in, get him, still figure out. I'm not sure. Are they going to land back in Croke Park with Aidan O'Shea playing the same position, expecting the same, you know, they need to figure that out. I'm not sure. Killian O'Connor, you know, so they need to figure that out and not be coming back and expecting a different outcome in terms of the roles that these players play. So he'd be happy, but still a lot to do based on what we've seen as well.
Yeah, I talking about teams' priorities and that sort of thing, it was interesting that it was a week before or 10 days before the start of the league, Kevin McStay hosted like a pre-league media night, which is quite unusual. And I wasn't there, but I know that he briefed sort of journalists off the record, kind of almost gave a bit of a, you know, a manifesto beforehand. And I heard a lot of his interviews and they were all very similar. And Kevin is nothing if not a good communicator. And it was very obvious that he was trying to, you know, I suppose the cliche is control the narrative, but he kept saying the same things about Mayo. You know, we were in with a shout in the by halftime in the quarterfinal last year with Dublin. We're going to be there this year. And it was a very deliberate attempt to control some of the talk that was around the Mayo team. And I remember thinking, there's a fair chance Mayo are going to start the league well here, because doing that is completely worthless if you then go out and you botch your first couple of games. And I think with Mayo having Galway and Dublin in their first two games, it looked like a very obvious place to start. And now Kevin, I think, has achieved what he was out for. You know, the talk around Mayo has changed. Nobody's talking about the quarterfinal last year. They've won their two games and they're right back up on the saddle and riding this wave that they of attention and optimism and everything else that they tend to get energy from. So I'm not surprised at all. Not being wise after the event, I genuinely did think that there was going to be a very good early kick in Mayo this year, because, you know, what would be the point of trying to get your message out there that you're going to be challenging for everything in front of you, and then you go out and you know that you're not at it in the first couple of rounds of the league. So whatever they do from here on in doesn't really matter now. I think that they've gotten more out of the first couple of rounds of the league than anybody else, bar maybe Derry.
Yeah, they've beaten their biggest local rival and their biggest national rival in the first 2 weeks, so it doesn't get much better than that. Next up, though, is a trip to, I think, to face Kerry after the break, so it doesn't get any easier for them. The final Division 1 game then, Connor, you had the pleasure of being at Dr. Hyde Park for Roscommon Galway. I'd encourage anyone listening to read Connor's match report. It really gives an insight into just how windy the conditions were, and just, I suppose, was there much to glean from the game, really? Obviously, people were interested to see if there was a response from Galway after they had an abject display against Mayo. But from reading your report, it seems like the win kind of killed it at a bit of a contest, and we're none the wiser, really, as to where Galway are.
No. Like, a little part of me dies inside when I have to sort of mention the weather in the match report, because it's extraordinarily tedious. But I mean, it was the biggest single factor in the game yesterday. It would have been a good day for kite surfers, but I'm not sure how big that sport is in Roscommon. No, it was a bad wind as well, insofar as, like, it wasn't consistent. It blew in gusts and it blew into the corner of the pitch, if people know the Hyde, not the corner where the graveyard is, but the other corner at that end of the pitch, and it meant that Galway in the first half, you know, they took an eternity over their kickouts. That, you know, balls were going missing. Goalkeeper wasn't happy with the inflation of the ball. They went looking for other ones, and it looked like it was going to work, because they were 4 points up going into, I think, the 34th, 35th minute. And Roscommon rattled off 3 points from frees, all from Conor Cox. And that probably gave them a bit of a buffer. Otherwise, Galway would have caught them. But yeah, it was sort of chaotic, and it wasn't particularly enjoyable. And I think both managers afterwards, I'm not sure. I know that all the inter-county GA teams now have teams of analysts who analyse performances and package them in lovely graphs that have colours and shapes and bar charts and everything else. But I'm not sure what the worth of the ones that Porrick Joyce and Davy Burke are looking at today, because they're not going to play a match of any significance whatsoever in those sort of conditions, unless they end up meeting in Salt Hill in a Connacht final or something like that. But no, I don't think any team harnessed the wind particularly well. But having said that, you know, sometimes in those conditions, you tend to find that the best footballer on the pitch kind of shines. And like Paul Conroy, all 35 years of age or whatever he is, was by far and away the best footballer on the pitch yesterday. His fielding and his kicking was absolutely brilliant. But Galway didn't have Shane Walsh. They didn't have Damien Comer. And if we're talking about priorities of all the counties, other than Dublin, maybe, I'm not sure that the league is high on Porrick Joyce's list of priorities.
Yeah.
Well, do you know what's an interesting point that Davy Burke made about that? And he said that having played in the Air Dome for the FBD games, and he said he didn't have a big panel with the Bridges players out, so they couldn't play internal challenge matches anywhere. He said the previous week against Tyrone, he said the legs went from the players. They were so used to running on that surface that when they got onto a soft, boggy pitch, the grass actually killed his players' legs. So, like, it's interesting. There's small little details that go into a team's performance at this time of year that a less revealing manager than Davey wouldn't have even told you, you know? Yeah. And that's, it goes to show you that there are so many idiosyncrasies to football at this time of year that we don't even appreciate.
I laughed reading your report this morning, Conor, because I've no...
I'm glad somebody knocked a bit of crack out of a dick.
Well, I have no good memories of the Hyde, right? Every time you went down there, there was a gale blowing and there's a wind chill, because it was generally in the league February. And I remember one time, I think it was around February, and be about 2012-13, and I wasn't starting, and I was on the bench with Jinxie. We're playing with the gale in the first, and it was freezing. Like, it was definitely minus numbered wind chill, and the boys were making a complete balls of playing with the wind. And I said to Jinxie, I said, we're frigged here, Jinxie. And he says, what do you mean? He says, no, I'm talking about me and you, not Monaghan. He says, because we're going to have about a 4 or 5 point lead at half time, right? We're going to have to come on and play against this bloody gale in the second half. I think you absolutely, you could not play against it. Like, there was no scoring with the breeze, and that's exactly what happened. We came in stone cold with 20 minutes to go, and next thing, Roscommon started kicking points from the middle of the pitch, and we were just having to watch them go over our heads, and you could do nothing. And we went off, we lost by a couple of points. Our goalkeeper, Mark Hugh, had to come on with 20 minutes to go. His feet were frozen, and he broke his foot kicking the ball out. So he did, hit the crowd. And I said, so anytime when I hear about windy gate it is in the Hyde, I just remember back to that, and I said there's just no joy in it for anybody.
Well, I thought, as he said, I think Conor did it justice in his report. Probably that the highlight of the contest. Division two, guys, you know, obviously Donegal and Armagh made strong starts. I think a lot of people predicted that. They're about 2-2. But it's at the other end, Conor, that there's a bit of intrigue. Like Meath, Kildare and Cork, all really struggling. Meath are the only one of the three who have a point in the board. They drew it for Fermanagh, but no points anywhere else, especially Cork losing to Louth yesterday. Like Meath have obviously, you know, by winning the Chalchan Cup, will be in the Sam Maguire next year. So, you know, it's looking quite precarious for Kildare and Cork at this stage.
Yeah, Kildare would be the one that are most curious to me. Like I saw them in a couple of league games last year against Derry and Cork in Newbridge, and they were absolutely brutal. Like it was, they were the two of the worst performances I saw all year, maybe the two worst. And I was talking to somebody yesterday in the Hyde who was at the Kildare game on Saturday night. And he said that the first half that Kildare produced was one of the worst performances in a half of football they've ever seen. And it's very, very strange because if you were to, you know, draw a list of teams that need to have a good league, that need to tap into the momentum, that need to build a bit of positive energy and a bit of positive publicity around them, Kildare are right up at the top. Right up at the top. Like they managed to make the Super 8s last year after a woeful league campaign. And like the chances are they won't even be in the All-Ireland series this year unless they drastically, drastically change what they do in the second half of the season. I don't know what, like the three counties you named there, Cork, Meath and Kildare, you know, we're forever talking about needing new faces at the top table in Gaelic football, you know, that it needs a bit of freshening up. And they're the three counties that should be best built to kind of insert themselves there, you know, in terms of playing numbers, in terms of interest in the county, in terms of the structure that's around them. But I don't know what it is with Kildare. It's always one step forward, two steps back. And this was the year with Glenn getting an extra year there, with Glenn Ryan and his management team, that they needed to make serious gains very quickly. Like Meath are a different case, whereas I think we expect a lot of Meath because of history. But if you go through the squad, like how many of us know too many about the footballers in that Meath squad? They're all very, very young and unproven. And it's not as if Meath club football, you know, is a market leader or anything like that. So, you know, I think we need to temper our expectations on Meath a small bit. But with Kildare, there's so many of those footballers who have come and gone that at underage level, at minor and 21 or minor and 20 later, were as good as, if not better, than their Dublin counterparts. You know, they were good. They were better footballers. They were able to compete. They were able to beat Dublin those age groups. And the Dublin players they beat have gone on to win All-Irelands, and they've gone on to be on Kildare teams that have drastically underperformed. So, you know, you would imagine that a lot of it is structural, that there's something with the culture in the county or the structure of how they bring players through and streamline that talent into the senior team. But I think that the senior team as an entity needed to make very sharp ground early this year, and they absolutely haven't done that. And Cork are in the same boat again. I'm reluctant to talk too much about Cork because I haven't really seen anything of them other than the bare results. But clearly losing to Louth now isn't a great look for them either.
But there's something very, I've given up trying to figure Kildare football out. Like I was invited down to the fundraising lunch in Naas a couple of weeks ago, the week before the league, and huge crowd in Lawlers and Naas and great buzz, and I was talking to Glenn Ryan, and you know, when you just go down and sort of see, like, they're mad about their football and huge resources and you know, great players at club level,
big numbers as well.
Huge numbers, I can't for the life of me figure it out. You know, like you go back 2 years ago, do you remember when they beat Dublin in the league in Newbridge, and then they absolutely ran riot over Monaghan in the fixture the following weekend, and they just went down. Remember, Monaghan beat Dublin in the last game that kept Monaghan up, and that actually relegated both Dublin and Kildare. And I just think from that point on, they've just sort of they just lost all sort of form or whatever signs that they might have been sort of showing that they were progress. And yes, and yet there's still potential there. Like they should have really been beating Monaghan and Tullamore last year. Like they looked like a team that had plenty there. But I just don't know what it is, because, you know, they have the physicality, they have talent, but whatever it is, I don't know. And Glenn Ryan must be just absolutely pulling his hair out, because of the player that he was and the teams that he put together and played with, that he's got this level of inconsistency. He's got to the point now that no matter what he must prepare during the week, he has absolutely no idea what Kildare team is going to show up when they turn out on a Sunday or a Saturday, because such is the erraticness of the performances. And that is so frustrating as a manager and as a player in terms of, you know, work ethic or structure or whatever it might be. They just have none of that. And it's a complete lottery at this stage with Kildare, and Cork are not too far behind them, you know, in terms of the resources and the potential and the ceiling, as I say, that these counties should have, that they're getting just nowhere near it. But sure, we're talking about that this, let's be honest, this 10 years, you know.
Yeah, well, the three teams I named all have home, you know, home games. Next up, Cork at home to Cavan, Meath versus Loudoun, Kildare, Armagh. Like, all three of them badly need a win. Obviously, yeah. Kildare against Armagh will probably be the toughest one, given Armagh's winning start to the league. Just looking at the other divisions, Connor, you know, Division 3, Down, Antrim and Westmeath all 2-2, and then in Division 4, Leitrim, Carlow and Laois all 2-2. The big talking point in Division 4 was Justin McNulty, the Laois manager, who's been, you know, reprimanded for, you know, he's a member of parliament in the north, and, you know, I think he's been suspended by the SDLP for leaving Stormont early to go and manage Laois. That's a kind of a strange one you don't see.
No, I don't think any of us like expected Justin to get back into management. And when you think about how long the Stormont assembly was suspended for, I mean, the timing couldn't have been any worse for him. But in Division 3, like I did think that Down and Westmead were the two likeliest to make hay there. But Division 4 is just a lottery. Like, it really is. It's very hard. I think if a good Division 3 gets relegated to Division 4, it's never a fait accompli that they're going to get immediate promotion, because you kind of get dragged into some of the kind of cat and dog fights that go in down there. So they'll both be interesting divisions. I suppose the big one is, depending on how Meath get on Division 2, there's a fair chance that the Division 3 winners will end up qualifying for the All-Ireland Senior Football Championship this year. So it's probably just something to keep in mind when you look at what goes on in that division. And it could be that the most important game, you know, a bit like when they, you know, every year with the playoff and the championship to go up to the Premiership, they call it the 90 million, the 6 billion. Mm-hmm. It goes up every year. I think the biggest game of the spring could end up being the Division 3 final in Croke Park, because that could be the difference between one of those teams playing in one of those teams playing in the Sam Maguire and one of those teams playing in the Talisman Cup.
Yeah, Dick, I'll give you the last word then. Any team from Division 3 or 4 that's piqued your interest or you're intrigued to see how they get on over the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, Down, you know, you'd like to see Down, you know, get back up. You know, they're a traditional county that we all sort of liked and enjoyed, you know, playing against and all the rest. And it's about time that they got back up and kept up at the level that they have. You know, fair play to Antrim. Correct me if I'm wrong. Did Antrim come out of Division 4 last year? It's good to see them making a bright start. So, as I say, I'm always sort of keeping an eye out for the Ulster counties to try and get up, because it sort of lends itself to a really competitive Ulster championship. So, listen, that's going to be, you know, as Conor says, very intriguing. Westmeath, you know, they'll not want to, you know, slip back. Like, they had a very positive year last year and you know, acquitted themselves very well in the All-Ireland Series. They'll want to try and get back up there. So, you know, expect, you know, there'll be an awful lot to play for in that division over the next couple of weeks. And as I say, you know, Sligo sticking their head up there as well. So I think that could be as competitive as anywhere else, even coming down to the last two or three games. Probably we might shift our focus to the bottom of Division 2 and the top of Division 3, because Division 1 could probably just sort of fall away a bit depending on who's interested or not, whereas there's an awful lot more to play for in those two divisions. So yeah, so it's good to see Down pushing on. As they sort of let themselves down a wee bit, I felt, in the Talisman Cup final last year when Meath bet them. They never turned up at all. So, you know, Conor Laverty there, we want to push on, because there is talent in Down, we know that. They just need to get a bit of consistency and build a better sort of structure and culture there. So let's keep an eye on them as the year goes on.
Yeah, and plenty to look forward to over the next couple of weeks. I'd like to thank Dick and Connor for joining me on today's show. A reminder that although there's no football next weekend, there's plenty to listen to in terms of the hurling show with Michael Verney. In the meantime, you can subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or listen on independent.ie. So until the next time, thanks so much for listening, and goodbye.